It's good to be back together. Missed you guys the last couple weeks. I'm glad we're here in person again. Today, I'm going to ask you to do a couple things that right now you probably don't want to do. But I hope by the end of the message, you will. So we'll see how that goes. We've been talking for a few weeks now about this frantic pace of life that we find ourselves immersed in, this overwhelming busyness with the constant demands on our time, right? The fact that we tend to go from one thing to the next with no room in between, with no space to just pause and take a breath and prepare for whatever is coming next. Think about what our lives look like. We jump out of bed in the morning. We rush through breakfast. We rush to get ready for the day. We rush to get the kids ready for school. We rush out the door to go to work. We rush through the day. We rush back home after work is over. We rush to get supper ready. We rush to get our to-do list done, all the stuff that needs done around the house. We rush to get the kids ready for bed. We rush to get ourselves ready for bed. We fall into bed, collapsed, exhausted, and then we wake up a few hours later and repeat the whole scenario all over again. How many of you are stressed out now, right? That's our lives, isn't it? That's what everyday life looks like for most of us. We've got jobs and kids and homes and responsibilities, all these things that pull on our time and our energy. We have a lot of plates that we try to keep spinning. And on top of all of that, we have technology, right? That constantly interrupts us with notifications and reminders and to-do lists and updates. You got to update this app, you got to update your operating system, and there's pop-ups, and now something's wrong, so you got to spend hours on the hold with tech support. There's just all this stuff that is constantly coming at us, and what we're doing, let's be honest, it's not working out so well. So today I'm going to try to convince you to do a couple things that right now you don't want to do, but hopefully by the end of the message you will. As we've been talking about this frantic pace of life that we're in, we've also been talking about God's invitations to us. Jesus says things to us like, come to me. He says, I'll give you rest. He says, I have living water that I want to offer you. He says, I have a burden for you to carry that's far different than what you've been carrying around. The burden I have for you, it's light and it's easy, and I will carry it with you. He offers to renew us. He offers to restore our souls. He invites us to cast all of our cares onto him. Jesus offers solutions to all of this that we've been talking about, the frantic pace of life and the stress and irritation that comes along with it. Part of the problem is when we compare the two, the problems we face and the solutions God offers, much of the time we choose the problems over the solutions. We've talked about this before, that we tend to embrace a full calendar, right? We celebrate a schedule that's overwhelmingly busy, and we say, look at all the things I'm accomplishing. And at the same time, we resist things like meditation, silence, fasting, prayer, just slowing down and spending some time alone in God's presence. We look at those things and say, I'm too busy. I don't have time for that stuff. Because we have been taught to embrace what is life-draining and to resist what is life-giving. See if you can relate to this. John Eldridge, in his book, Get Your Life Back, he says this. He's talking about sitting down to just do some reading and just to relax a little bit. And then what always happens. His phone vibrates, right? And a notification has popped up. So here's what he says. My phone vibrates. The notification causes a reflex response in me, a learned response. I pick it up. I see the alert. It's a text or an email or a voicemail. I set it back down and go back to my book. But it takes a few minutes now to recover my train of thought. On top of that, now that I'm thinking about notifications, I remember, that's right, my friend sent me a link to an article that I wanted to read the other day. So I decide I'm already distracted, so I'll go ahead and have a look at it. I open the article. And I'm bombarded with pop-ups. And no, I don't want to be on your mailing list. And only about a third of the screen actually contains the article, and the rest is advertising. I get 5 seconds into the article when another pop-up screen asks for my email address. This stuff is so irritating. Isn't that our everyday lives? We're just constantly bombarded with all this stuff that's coming at us. Somebody compared it to driving at night in a snowstorm. If you've ever done that, you know exactly what that's like, right? Your headlights are on and all you can see is the snow rushing at your windshield. You can't see where you're going. You can't see anything else around you. You have no perspective. All you see is all this stuff that's rushing at you constantly. That's our everyday lives. We're just bombarded with all these things that are screaming for our attention all the time. No wonder we're so stressed out. Well, down through the ages, followers of Christ have believed that setting time aside every day to just spend focused time, focusing intentionally on God's presence and God's voice, that that's really important. In Hebrews chapter 11, the writer talks about the life of faith. He talks about what it looks like to walk in faith, and he gives several examples. He talks about the challenges to living a life of faith and what happens in our lives when we do live a life of faith. And then he comes to chapter 12, and he starts out with these two verses. Chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, he says this, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up." He says there are things that slow us down as we try to live a life that honors God, as we try to live a life connected to God and the life he offers us. There are things that slow us down. There are things that weigh us down and get in the way. So we need to strip all of that off and lay it aside. And then he says this. He says, "And let us run with endurance the race God has set before us." We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion, who initiates and perfects our faith. There are two things he says here that I want to zero in on. He says, strip off every weight and keep our eyes on Jesus. Set aside the distractions and give your attention to Christ. And I want to make the point that until we do the first one, we can't do the second one. I think much of the time we try. This is one of the things we run into sometimes as followers of Christ. We say, okay, I'm gonna spend time reading God's word. I'm gonna spend time praying. I'm gonna go to church. I'm gonna fast or try meditating. I'm gonna do these things that will help me really connect with God. And we try to do those things to focus our eyes on Christ, but we do those things while at the same time we continue to hold on to all the other stuff, all the other distractions that get in the way and keep us from giving him our full attention. He says we strip off every weight, we do that first, and then we're able to focus our eyes on Christ. He says we're in a race, and that race, sometimes it feels exhausting, doesn't it? And the reason it feels exhausting isn't because of the race itself, but because of all the stuff we're carrying as we run that race. He says we strip off every weight. And the word he uses here for weight, it carries with it the idea of a bulging mass that we're carrying around. Just picture in your mind like one of these huge duffel bags that's stuffed full. If you've ever gone on vacation and packed way too much, you know what I mean, right? You got this duffel bag and it's stuffed so full, you have to sit on it and you're trying to get the zipper closed, you know, and it's that whole thing. Just picture that. That's what he's describing here, is this massive weight that we can't even stand up straight. We're bent over trying to hold this thing because it's too much. And he says, we're in a race. Try running a race while you're carrying that. It's impossible. And so he says, if we're going to run this race with endurance, if we're going to complete it without giving up, if we're going to run the race without collapsing, he says, all of that stuff that's weighing us down, we have to lay it aside and get rid of it. And then he says, we focus our eyes on Jesus. Now, what does that mean? It means to look intently at something. It means to fix the mind upon something, not just in passing, but in a focused way. One translation says it this way, we fasten our gaze upon Jesus. And the word he uses here literally means to look away from this so I can look at this instead. It's like the story of Mary and Martha we talked about several weeks ago, where Martha is running around the house. Jesus is there with them, and Martha's running around trying to do all this stuff, and she's getting frustrated. She's overwhelmed, and Mary is just sitting there doing one thing. She's listening to Jesus, having a conversation with him. And Jesus says to Martha, "You're so distracted and upset by all these things. Mary has chosen one thing. She's chosen the best thing." And that's what Hebrews is talking about here. Choosing one thing instead of all the other stuff. Choosing what is life-giving instead of what is life-draining. Setting aside all the distractions so we can give Christ our attention, so we can give him our focus, because he is the one who renews. He is the one who gives life. He is the one who says, I have living water for you. I will restore your soul. So we fix our eyes on him. We fasten our gaze on him. But doing that takes a choice. And the choice is to take a step back from the distractions so we can give him our full attention. David says this in Psalm 34:5, those who look to him for help will be radiant with joy. No shadow of shame will darken their faces. Those who look to him, fastening our gaze on him. He says this in Psalm 119, starting in verse 97. He says, oh, how I love your instructions. I think about them all day long. Your commands make me wiser than my enemies, for they are my constant guide. Yes, I have more insight than my teachers, for I'm always thinking about your laws. So Hebrews says we can run with endurance, free from all the stuff that weighs us down. And David says we can find joy. We can experience freedom from shame and from guilt. He says we can receive wisdom and guidance and insight from God himself. We can live life on purpose and we can walk in victory. That's available to us. But for us to experience that, for us to embrace that, we have to make some choices. And it starts with throwing aside the distractions and then fastening our gaze on Christ. Turning away from all the other stuff that is screaming for our attention and giving him our attention instead. David says, I look to him. He says, throughout the day, I give attention to his word, to his voice. See, there is freedom available for us. There is life and renewal available for us, but we have to choose it. And choosing it means setting some other things aside. So back to technology. I don't think we realize how difficult our use of technology and its constant assault on our attention has made this. It's hard to give God your full attention when your attention is constantly being targeted and taken captive, isn't it? And the thing about it is we're cooperating with that. We invited that. We spend tons of money on these little devices that constantly hijack our thought life and demand our attention nonstop. It's hard to keep our eyes on him, to hear his voice, to listen to his guidance, to receive the life he's offering us, to give him attention. It's hard to do that when we're being pulled in 1,000 different directions by a device that we have fastened to our wrist or fastened to our hip. It's hard to do that. Our ability to connect with God in a life-changing way, that depends on our willingness to give him our focused and undivided attention. And our ability to do that depends on our willingness to set aside the distractions, all the other stuff that is screaming for our attention. So in a few minutes, I'm going to ask you to do a couple things that right now you probably don't want to do. But I hope you begin to see the value of doing those things. Before we get into that, I want to talk about two different types of people. David, in Psalm 1, talks about two different types of people and two different approaches to life. Look at what he says. He says, oh, the joys of those who do not follow the advice of the wicked, or stand around with sinners, or join in with mockers. But they delight in the law of the Lord, meditating on it day and night. They are like trees planted along the riverbank, bearing fruit each season. Their leaves never wither, and they prosper in all they do, but not the wicked. They are like worthless chaff scattered by the wind. He talks about two different kinds of people here. The first, he says, is filled with joy. He says they're like a tree planted by the river. Now, don't get lost in the poetry of trees and rivers. What he's describing here is a person who has deep roots. And just like a tree that has deep roots, it's not going to be uprooted by high winds. It's not going to be damaged by the storms that come. It will stand firm in the face of those storms. And he talks about a tree that's planted right next to the river. And a tree that is right next to the river has a constant supply, doesn't it? And in the same way, he's talking about a person who is connected to God, who has a constant supply of God's life and God's presence because they've made a choice to focus on him. And he talks about this tree and says that it doesn't wither. It bears fruit in every single season. And in the same way, he's describing a person who stays connected to God no matter what is happening. And because they do, they have more than enough of what God is offering. So they're able to offer something to those around them. He's describing a person who is vibrant and fully alive. And he contrasts that with a person, he says, who their life is so lacking in substance that he compares them to just a handful of dust particles blown around by the wind. And the difference between the two people is this. The first person he describes has chosen to turn away from one thing and to focus on something else. Just like in Hebrews, when it talks about turning away from this, laying aside the distractions, fixing our gaze on Christ. This is a person, David says, who turns away from these things so they can focus instead on this. What's the this? He says they delight in God's word. That word delight means to lean in towards something. He says they meditate on it day and night. And the thing about meditation is you can't rush that. By its very nature, meditation means we slow down, we stop, we turn our gaze away from everything else, and we fix our focus on just one thing instead of all the other stuff that is screaming for our attention. And what he's describing here is a person who has made a decision to give focused and sustained attention to God, his word, and his voice. And if we want to experience more of God in our lives, this is how. But we have to make a choice. So I'm going to ask you to do a couple things that you don't want to do. But hopefully now you see the value of doing those things. Because experiencing more of God and finding the renewal that he offers us, experiencing depth in our walk with him, requires creating space in our day to meet with him. To intentionally put ourselves into a place that allows us to meet with him, that allows him to fill us with himself and to transform us. And a major obstacle to us setting aside time to do that, a major obstacle is this, isn't it? And I know you Android users right now are saying, wow, that's awesome. He held up an iPhone and said, that's a distraction to meeting with God. Let's be honest, Android is a bigger distraction because they're always freezing or shutting down or randomly catching on fire, right? I just lost half my audience. Anyways, the point is this. It's really hard to give God our attention, to completely give him our attention when our attention is being hijacked and taken captive by our technology. So here's what I'm asking you to do. We're going to pass around a couple of trash cans and ask. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that. I want to talk about some ways to use our technology instead of being enslaved by our technology. As I said a few weeks ago, technology is a great servant, but it's a terrible master. And I think in many ways we have allowed it to master us to where we're not in control of it anymore. It controls us. So I just want to give you four suggestions, four things, and just to say, give it a try this week and see how that works out for you. Four things that we could all do to help out with this. Here's the first one. Turn off your notifications. We get notifications for everything, don't we? Like every single app on our phone wants to send us some notification about something, and we are bombarded with notifications all the time. Do we really need all of that in our lives? Do we really need it? Like, do you really need to know that your Aunt Millie just posted another picture of her cats on Facebook? Do you need an alert every time that happens? Do you need to know that, you know, some guy in Minnesota caught this weird looking fish? Do you need the alert that that happened, like interrupting your day? Do you really need the latest political outrage popping up on your phone the second it happens, or the latest ridiculous thing somebody in the media says? Do you need that popping up in your phone constantly? We don't really need all of this, do we? Is it adding life to us? No, it's adding frustration and stress to us. So why not turn it off? Why not take a break from all those notifications? And if nothing else, set your phone to do not disturb for a while. I made a decision a while ago. I have mine set automatically. It's on a schedule where automatically every day at a certain time, it goes to do not disturb for several hours. And during that time, there's only a few people who are able to get a hold of me through my phone, because we all need that. We all need time to just take a step back. We all need breathing room in our lives. So that's the first encouragement, is take control of your notifications. Here's the second one. Create some space for yourself in the morning. Our attention is constantly assaulted from the moment we wake up. From the moment the alarm goes off, or whatever it is that wakes you up in the morning, our attention is constantly bombarded with stuff. Give yourself some time to wake up. Give yourself some time to enjoy a few peaceful moments before you dive headfirst into the craziness that awaits you that day. Like you don't need to check your Twitter feed the second you wake up. You don't need to check your email first thing before you get out of bed, or check the news before you even get started with your day. That stuff, I promise you, it can wait. It'll be there later on. But give yourself the grace, first thing in the morning, to make yourself aware of the presence of God with you. Give yourself the time to make yourself aware of the life of God in you and with you before you fill your awareness with all the other stuff, the busyness and the problems and the stress. Create some space in the morning where you can really connect with God before you jump into the day. Here's the third suggestion. Take a break from social media. Research confirms what we already inherently know, and it's this. There is a direct correlation between the massive amount of time we spend on social media and the skyrocketing rates of anxiety and depression. There is a direct connection between those two. I think social media has a role, and I think there are good things about social media, but if we're honest with ourselves, it's taken on a life of its own, and it has become incredibly toxic. Here's the challenge. This week, whatever amount of time you spend on social media, cut it in half and see what that does for you. I think what you'll notice is at the end of the week, you'll notice your stress level is probably decreased. Your frustration level is probably decreased. Your irritation with your friends who post ridiculous stuff on Facebook is probably going to decrease, because you're not going to get all those notifications of, oh, your friend just posted something ridiculous on social. You don't need that, right? So give yourself a break from that. Just cut it in half for a week and see how that helps. And after a week, cut it in half again. I think it's important for us to take control back over these things instead of being constantly controlled by them. Here's the last one, the fourth one. Do real things. And by real things, I mean physical things. Do things that require physical interaction. So much of our lives are wrapped up in the digital world. And I think taking a break from that and doing things that we can actually affect physically is really beneficial. I discovered a long time ago as a pastor how therapeutic it is for me to do something as simple as just cutting the grass. How that's, for me, that's not work. For me, that is incredibly relaxing. And here's why. As a pastor, when you're in the ministry, and this is true of other areas of work too, sometimes we don't always see the results of the work we're doing, right? Like for me as a pastor, I spend hours and hours every week preparing a sermon and delivering the sermon, and I don't always see what effect that has on people's lives. And over a long period of time, when you're investing a lot of time and energy and passion in something and not seeing if it has any impact, that can become incredibly draining. So for me, when I cut the grass, I can see I just did something, right? I can see, okay, that has an impact. The grass was this long and now it's this long. I just did something and there, I did that, right? And so there's something therapeutic about doing something physical where we can see a direct impact of our actions. So that's the encouragement, is do some physical things, do some real things. Maybe it is cutting the grass. Maybe it's doing some yard work. Maybe it's right now shoveling snow. Maybe it's doing something else, like going for a walk or riding a bike or doing something that playing a musical instrument. Maybe for some of you, it's writing. I believe, we talked about this with our worship team a few weeks ago. I believe with all my heart, there's some great, amazing songs out there that are just waiting to be written. Songs that will inspire people, songs that will turn people's focus back to God, that are just waiting to be written. And some of those songs are going to be written by some of you. I think there's some amazing books out there waiting to be written. And some of those books are waiting to be written by some of you. And it's carving out time, getting away from all the other stuff and just saying, okay, God, what do you want to do through me here and now? How do you want to use this time? Let me hear your voice, God. Let me be your hands and your feet and receive your direction. Here's the point I'm making. If you create some sacred space every day, God will meet you there. But if we're going to have space for God in our lives, we have to create space for God in our lives. It doesn't just happen automatically. We live in a world that works against that constantly. So if we're going to have space for God, it's going to happen because we choose to do that. And so the writer of Hebrews says, cast aside all the other stuff. That huge, that massive duffel bag, that all those distractions, he says, put it aside and fix your attention on Christ. I'm encouraging you every day to do both. Not because you ought to, but because you need to. We all need to. And I pray that our worship time is that for us. That opportunity to fix our eyes on Christ, to fasten our gaze on Him. See, I believe worship shouldn't only happen in here, it needs to happen out there too. But I also believe if we're not worshiping when we come here, we're not going to do it out there either. And there's a lot of things that can interfere with that when we're here too. We all come in with stuff on our minds, with stuff in our thoughts, stuff that we're dealing with that can become a huge distraction to where the music becomes just background music and our thought life is focused on all this other stuff. I want to encourage you to recognize that and set it aside, because these songs that we sing every Sunday, these are an invitation, every one of them. It's not just filler, it's an invitation. It's an opportunity for us in a world that is screaming for our attention to say no to all of that and to fasten our gaze, to fix our eyes on Christ, to be reminded of His love and His presence and His power here with us. We have an opportunity every time we sing. Just like Mary and Martha, Jesus was right there in the room with them, and they both had a choice to make to either focus on other things or to focus on Him. And in the same way, we have a choice to make. And we don't always recognize it because it can become overwhelming. So I'm calling it out so we can recognize it and say, you know what? I'm not going to let that happen. I'm not going to miss out because God is right here, right now. And He's inviting us to embrace His presence and to receive the life and the renewal that He alone offers us. So let's do that together. We're going to sing a closing song that's a reminder of how deeply we need God's presence in our lives. But before we do that, we're going to do the 1 minute pause together. So the 1 minute pause is going to be on the screen. And I just want to encourage you, just take this time. And anything that's vying for your attention, anything else that's going on right now that might keep you from meeting with Him, just take this 1 minute to lay it at His feet. And then at the end of the 1 minute pause, we'll stand together and sing our closing song.